Welcome to Digital Health Talks. Each week, we meet with the healthcare leaders making an immeasurable difference in equity, access, and quality. Hear about what tech is worth investing in and what isn't as we focus on the innovations that deliver. Join Megan Antonelli, Janae Sharp, and Shahid Shah for a weekly No BS deep dive on what's really making an impact in healthcare.
Welcome to another episode of Health Impacts Live Digital Health Talks. I am here today with my friend, Chris Raw, CIO of Mayo Clinic. Chris really needs no introduction to our audience. He has been a frequent guest over the years, and our friendship predates Health Impact to his early years at Minute Clinic. Back then in, 2008, 10, retail clinics were a novel concept, and Minute Clinic was one of the first. Healthcare's sort of recent, and some might even say fast-paced for healthcare, the digital evolution has ushered in lots of technologies like telemedicine and remote monitoring and apps and wearables that are changing those service models to meet patient expectations. And as a result, the long-accepted primary care model-based healthcare is changing. So I'm so happy to have you here, Chris. Thanks for joining. And I wanted to talk a little bit about that model that's changing, how organizations like Mayo Clinic are responding to it, and of course, the evolution that you've seen coming from a Minute Clinic and now at Mayo. So thanks again for being here, and we can start with that.
Thanks, Megan. I only work for clinics that start with the letter M, apparently. Thanks. Yeah, Minute Clinic was really interesting. I was there from 2006 to 2010 in its kind of go-go years when it went from 40 to 500 to then 1,000 clinics. Look, it was really founded on two kind of big ideas. One idea was healthcare needs to be convenient when people need it, and that there was a number of kind of acute minor conditions that needed medical attention but could be treated pretty easily. And it was a lot of pediatrics, right? It was pink eye, ear infections, sore throat, that kind of thing, where going to an emergency room is the wrong idea. Urgent cares were usually backed up. And the idea was put it really, really close to where people shop and live and create a great patient-centered experience. That was number one. Number two was taking advantage of mid-levels. And at the time, it was a lot of nurse practitioners and PAs were coming into the field, and they have the ability to practice with some autonomy, in some cases, full autonomy for a certain range of diseases. And there was a advantage in being able to use mid-level, which have an economic advantage. They're not paid as much as doctors. So the combo of the two is what was attractive, and CVS bought us and then really grew us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's crazy to think. And back then, I mean, there was so much conversation around what would it do? It would move the medical home, and the medical home was really just getting traction in and of itself at that point. But then also the challenges around interoperability. And I know that you guys worked on that then. And of course, we're still seeing that now. So with the proliferation of new systems where people are going to specialty providers online, right? For whether it's weight management or menopause, lots of women's health. It's interesting how the specialty providers are often by demographic, and how are we seeing some of the need for that integration happen now? And sort of what are you thinking in terms of what we will see in the coming years as a result of that?
Well, I don't want to say that interoperability is a solved problem, but it is a massively improved problem. I recently gave a talk that was intended to be somewhat humorous, describing kind of the Paleolithic era, the stone tool era, Bronze Age, Iron Age, and so on. When I started at Minute Clinic, I was an idiot. We were trying to integrate with other healthcare groups, and the idea was send a visit summary to the patient's medical home. We did that in the form of a letter, and we were running a couple of clinics in a couple cities. It was pretty easy to create a directory of doctors and mail letters. Well, that was not going to happen at scale. So I thought, okay, this should be easy. I'll find a way to send those messages electronically, and discovered that there was nothing there. So we did some pioneering work. We put some basic medical records into a format, the continuity of care record into an XML document rendered as a SOAP note, and we were ready to send it. So we kind of had the envelope right. We sort of had the contents right. We were using clinical coding the right kind of way, but there was no network with which to transmit it at all. So we tried to do something kind of on the side with SureScripts that had some limited traction. I then went to SureScripts later to try and push that forward in the era of directed exchange that came out as the form of meaningful use, blah, 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 blah. That's history, but it's a good reminder that 15 years ago, we literally had nothing. Mm-hmm. And we were dealing with do-it-yourself stuff. And now you look at the ONC records and data and what, 91%, 90% of clinics and hospitals are connected to one of the two big data exchanges. And now TEFCA is really going to keep moving that along and the 21st century cures and so on. So when I look at the records that come into Mayo Clinic today, now we're talking about the quality of the record and the conciseness of the record. And boy, there's a lot of computer-generated text, and can we get rid of that? And how do we make sure we don't have duplicates? It's the refinement that we're trying to do now.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah, you know, it's amazing to think of the progress. I mean, and when we used to sort of complain of the slow pace, it's moved quickly, and there's been a lot of progress made in terms of just the implementation and just the access to the information that patients can get.
I think that's right.
And I know we've talked about this before too, in terms of your experience as a cancer survivor, as a patient who went through the system, and to go through the system, not only as a patient, but a leader of the most amazing healthcare system in the world. And to go into that, but to see the inadequacies of what gets communicated. And I think you've mentioned we're talking now about there's multiple digital front doors that people are going to go through because they have multiple providers and it's multiple places of entry. But when you then get in there and you are treated, you tend to have one door that you exit from just by the nature of that. And how we handle patients there is not always the best way. And I think you've talked about that, but I'd love to hear you sort of talk about, as now you're luckily a couple of years from that experience and what you learned, and then of course what you've implemented or focused on. How did that change your efforts at Mayo?
Yeah. So the thing that I noticed being a patient, and I went through cancer twice. So the first time was just after we implemented our EHR, and my focus was, how's the EHR doing? And I could find lots of ways in which we weren't optimized. And we still live with, how do we make doctors and other clinicians feel like the electronic tools work for them and patients and not the other way around? Maybe by the second time around, I was noticing things like, we have a really good digital front door at Mayo, but we have a really terrible digital back door. And I don't mean to disparage my colleagues. We're just not good at it. We don't provide survivorship support or aftercare or support for caregivers. And we're getting better at it, especially in things like our hospital at home. But one adjacent thing that I've been sort of focusing on recently, Megan, that might be useful, is sitting back and thinking about the limited times. Mayo's a great system. Places where I ran into things that were suboptimal. And for most part, it was where we and others have focused so much on quality improvement for really good reasons. And therefore, to improve quality, you have to improve processes. So we've got these perfect processes that are getting safer and safer and better, but they don't connect with each other. And so you get this disjointed experience, and it's because now we're at the point where we need to say, hooray, we've done a good job at processes, but we need to pivot towards delivering healthcare as integrated services and products from a patient-centric view, mm-hmm. which means challenging some of the processes that we put in place that have kept us safe or help us make margin or whatever those things might be. So if I'm on a crusade, it would be to think about, how can we move from process-centric to patient-centric, and patient-centric in the form of creating products and services that they want to consume.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is not easy.
You got me on my soapbox there. Sorry.
Yeah, no, I like it. Well, that's what we want to hear about, is what you're focused on. And And I think, and it's the holy grail, right? Is to really give patients what they need when they need it in what they're looking for. And of course that applies to all patients and the changing demographic and the needs of them. So we talked a little bit about history. We talked about where you're focused on now. And I know you've spent and done so much in the AI space with Mayo. Share with our audience in the little time we have left, just a little bit about where things are going with large language models, how you guys are responding, what you think that's going to do, and really, what are the implications for patient-centered care within AI, and what are some of those opportunities?
Yeah, we could talk about that for a long time. So there's the before ChatGPT and after ChatGPT era, and in the kind of OG era, we're doing lots of algorithm development that was super cool. And that continues. It's just not quite as sexy, and it doesn't get the headlines that Gen AI does. Gen AI is an unbelievably powerful set of technologies that's the culmination of a lot of things brought together. So we have a major partnership with Google. We have partnerships with others around model building and other kinds of things. We're going to do a whole mix of build, buy, integrate, and move forward. There's a lot of things that we're working on that will be in patient care that have to go through an FDA software as a medical device process and other helper tools like voice that are in a different space. And I think that 5 years from now, the interaction of clinicians with the electronic health record will be very different, and it will be increasing amounts of voice and less typing and clicking. And I think our clinicians will be extremely happy with that future. But it depends on the voice technologies being reliable enough, trusted. Can we bake them into the workflow and so on? But those kinds of ways that we change the way that the doctors and patients interact is super cool. It's going to be an accretion of a lot of little AI, and I like to talk about little AI. But we're also going to do some big AI, diagnostic tools, treatment tools, and so on. So I'm super excited about this. I wish I was 30 years younger. The future's unbelievable. Holy smokes.
Yeah, it is amazing to have seen. And as we've watched this sort of evolution of innovation and implementation and adoption around healthcare technology, what we've seen in the last 3 years and amidst the pandemic and then in the time from it, has been amazing, and it will change. I mean, a lot of the things that we wanted for so long changed overnight in terms of access to sort of telemedicine and virtual care and things like that. And certainly not with no work. I know, it wasn't that easy, but to some it seemed that easy. So, but the future is bright, and I like that. So, will we see you? I will see you at HIMSS, I hope.
I'll be there.
Fabulous. Well, I look forward to it. And thank you so much for joining us. It's wonderful to see you. And we'll see you soon.
Thanks, Megan. Anytime.
Thanks.
Thank you for joining us for this week's Health Impacts Digital Health Talk. Don't miss another podcast. Subscribe at digitalhealthtalks.com. And to join us at our next face-to-face event, visit healthimpactlive.com.